How much would you need to be happy? I recently heard of someone who was excited to have found out the number, and he had found that number was $50 million. Given those facts, I'm surprised to not see many downcast eyes today and sad faces. Recently, I've been thinking about how much of my stress and the things I'm grateful for center around finances. Those questions, those decisions, those hopefully outcomes, good outcomes. We get really easily wrapped up in those things. And I've felt a bit convicted about that. And so I've been wanting to turn my mind toward other things to be grateful about. So I want to talk this morning about gratitude. I'll ask again, what's the threshold to your happiness? What are you waiting for? I think most of us have not put our happiness on hold for some future date. Maybe not our happiness, but are there things you're discontent about? What are the things you're discontent about this morning? So I've been digging into the idea of gratitude and some of the very interesting research around it. I've always disliked the idea of fake it till you make it. That is just an idea that has never resonated with me. If things are bad, I'm okay with feeling bad about things. I don't think it's always good to just put on a sunny disposition and pretend that, there's a silver lining to every cloud and there's something good behind every bad thing. I don't care for that kind of fake positivity. But the research on gratitude is challenging that notion for me a little bit. I'll get into that a little further down the line. If you care to, you can turn to Colossians 3. This may seem not directly on topic at first, but we'll bring it around. Colossians 3, 1 through 17. Since then you have been raised with Christ, set your hearts on things above, where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things, for you died and your life is now hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. Put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature: sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires, and greed, which is idolatry. Because of these, the wrath of God is coming. You used to walk in these ways in the life you once lived, but now you must also rid yourselves of all such things as these: anger, rage, malice, slander, and filthy language from your lips. Do not lie to each other, since you have taken off your old self with its practices and have put on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge in the image of its creator. Here there is no Gentile or Jew, circumcised or uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave, nor free, but Christ is all and is in all. Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive one another. If any of you has a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, since as members of one body you were called to peace, and be thankful. Let the message of Christ dwell among you richly as you teach and admonish one another with all wisdom, through psalms, hymns, and songs from the Spirit, singing to God with gratitude in your hearts. And whatever you do, whether in word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. So this passage is not all happy. It's not all about lovely things. It talks about the wrath of God. It talks about evil and evildoers. But I'm struck with how it addresses these concerns. It's sandwiched between set your hearts on things above, set your hearts on heavenly things. And then it comes around again at the end, talking about being filled with the peace of Christ through various things, among those gratitude. And as I've said, that's the one I'm singling out here. It doesn't urge us just to focus on the good and not worry about the bad. It doesn't urge us to just set our sole focus on rooting out the bad. It calls us to address what is bad in the world through goodness. How many of you garden or farm in some aspect? Doesn't have to be big or major. We like getting our hands in the dirt. And about this afternoon and tomorrow, a lot of us are really going to be thinking about getting our hands in the dirt, I think, as we enjoy some warmer weather. So, what's your top method for a fruitful garden? Is it to go out and pull weeds? And pull weeds and pull weeds and only pull weeds. Is it?
You plant the crop you want to see produce.
There you go. Pulling weeds is good. They need to go. And it'd also be better if they weren't there in the first place, and we can do things to help with that. But a garden without weeds is of really no inherent good if there isn't actually something good growing in it. So this passage, we have this. There's a list of weeds that need to be dealt with, but there's a list of seeds that need to be planted for a fruitful and productive life. Back to fake it till you make it. What I found in looking at the studies into gratitude is that there is tremendous good outcome in simply choosing to go through the motions. There was a study done at the University of California, Davis, where they asked all participants to write a few sentences each week focusing on certain topics. One group wrote about things they were grateful for that had occurred during the week. A second group wrote about daily irritations or things that had displeased them. And the third wrote about events that had affected them with no emphasis on negative or positive. After 10 weeks, and again, they're just asked to simply write this down. They're not saying meditate on it, think about it, just write it down. After 10 weeks, those who wrote about gratitude were more optimistic and felt better about their lives. Also, they exercised more and had fewer visits to physicians than those who focused on sources of aggravation. That's just writing down a few things you're grateful for every week. Let me find my place here. I'll just read this paragraph. Another leading researcher in the field, a psychologist at the University of Pennsylvania, tested the impact of various positive psychological interventions on 411 people, each compared with a control assignment of writing about early memories. When their week's assignment was to write and personally deliver a letter of gratitude to someone who had never been properly thanked for his or her kindness, participants immediately exhibited a huge increase in happiness scores. This impact was greater than that from any other intervention, with benefits lasting for a month. Other studies have looked at how being grateful can improve relationships. For example, a study of couples found that individuals who took time to express gratitude for their partner not only felt more positive toward the other person, but also felt more comfortable expressing concerns about their relationships. Relationship, I should say. And one other very interesting study was it was done in 1978, that compared a group of quadriplegics who had experienced an accident and were paralyzed to lottery winners. 6 months after the life-changing event, those who had been paralyzed had returned to very nearly the same level of happiness that they were at the day before their accident. The person I saw presenting this said, the good news is that you are you. Regardless of what happens to you, you are still you. And you carry that goodness with you even when bad things happen. The lottery winners, 6 months out, were not dramatically less happy, but overall less happy than they were the day before their life-changing event. Probably within a margin of error, those who had been paralyzed and those who had won the lottery 6 months out experienced about the same level of happiness with their current situation, with those who had won the lottery possibly a little bit worse off. So, gratitude as a practice, it changes us. And Dr. Andrew Huberman, he's a neuroscientist at Stanford, says, we now know that a gratitude practice can improve many, many aspects of our mental and physical health by default, so that we don't always have to be in practice trying to be happy. In other words, he's saying, choosing to practice gratitude actually rewires your brain, and it gives you a new default to where you start out working at this, and eventually it becomes who you are. And I hope that that is something we can all aspire to. The list of benefits of choosing gratitude is long and interesting, but I will leave you with this quote from the author Melody Beattie. Gratitude unlocks the fullness of life. It turns what we have into enough and more. It turns denial into acceptance, chaos to order, confusion to clarity. It can turn a meal into a feast, a house into a home, a stranger into a friend. Thank you.